Who was that masked man? That was the question the world was asking after Subcomandante Marcos burst on the scene with 600 poorly armed Mayan Indians on New Year's Day in 1994, the first day of the North American Free Trade Agreement. Wearing a ski mask, Marcos spoke on behalf of the indigenous of Mexico, who called NAFTA a summary execution. It was, as Tom Hayden wrote in the Zapatista Reader, a war against oblivion, an armed uprising by the stones the builders forgot in a town named for Columbus. Thousands of masked Mayans were invoking the indigenous cultural identity and the land reforms of Zapata. Despite living in one of Mexico's richest provinces, the million indigenous of Chiapas were condemned to precarious lives of poverty, political powerlessness, and invisibility. NAFTA, they said, would exterminate them. Dignity will resist, was their cry. The Mayan rebels embraced the spontaneous support of civil society for a ceasefire and for justice. They said they took up guns only to be heard. They created autonomous spaces where they said liberty, democracy, and justice could thrive. They called for the same rights for all Mexicans and all people, and for a world in which many worlds fit. They said, we are neither the only ones nor the best ones. We do not have the truth or the answer to everything. Provided we raise good questions, that's enough for us. Against all odds, the Zapatistas helped catalyze a nonviolent mass movement for democracy in Mexico, in Latin America, and ultimately around the world. Their actions influenced the indigenous of Bolivia, where 1.5 million Indians now live in autonomous communities. The mysterious Marcos explained to the world why he was called Subcomandante. He was but a representative for the will of the Mayan community councils. After Marcos originally came to the jungle in the classic mode of a Marxist guerrilla to organize the indigenous, instead they organized him. Our army, he said, became scandalously Indian. How else could the Zapatistas emerge as an organization whose leaders govern by obeying the will of the people? Reputedly, over 2 million people in southern Mexico are now using these council ways, a postmodern reinvention of ancient indigenous governance. Okissimmee, yes, indeed. Okissimmee Forest has been working with the Mayan peoples in Chiapas for over 20 years. She believes that their survival is crucial for the survival of humanity. Oki's nonprofit organization, Red Wind Councils, is structured according to the ancient Mayan, the ancient Indian councils of the medicine wheel, of the medicine wheel waves. She believes the inherent strength of the people and the culture will prevail. Red Wind's Councils provides humanitarian assistance to help people achieve self-sufficiency and to bring social stability. Its projects include healthcare, farming, women's collectives, cultural preservation, construction, and education. Born in Quebec of Mohawk descent, Oki was called at an early age to seek the most authentic transmissions of indigenous ways of knowing from around the world. She began a spiritual journey that took her to Mongolia, where she studied with Mongolian shamans. After many years of travel and study, she returned to Canada in 1984. There, she was received into the Wolf Clan at Kanawake, near Montreal. In 1986, she was called to Chiapas, where she was initiated into the world of Mayan healers. In 1994, she created a spiritual medicine center there. Oki has taken on the mission of sharing the universal ideas and practices of what some call the medicine wheel or the great shield of understanding. This ancient body of indigenous knowledge teaches individual and collective awakening to our true responsibility as human beings to learn to live in harmony with nature's cycles and with the whole of the universe. The keepers of indigenous wisdom traditions, since ancient times, predicted that if the people disconnected from the ways of the earth, humanity would be lost. Another central aspect to Oki's work is the sharing of ancient Mohawk, Mongolian, and Mayan prophecies on the reemergence of the feminine principle in our time. These teachings prefigured an epoch that would call upon women to show the way to live more in accordance with the earth. Oki gathered the essences of some of these cross-cultural teachings in her very powerful book, Dreaming the Council Ways. She teaches frequently and holds regular workshops here in the States. So we give thanks to Oki Simony Forrest and for all those for whom she stands with us today, for sharing her most gracious presence as a timely messenger and a very generous teacher. Please join me in welcoming Oki Simony Forrest.
Buenos días, hermanos y hermanas. When I arrived in Chiapas in 1986, it was just before a planetary configuration of great significance to the ancient Maya. In my first year there, it became clear to me that although nobody was talking about it, a revolution was going to happen because the oppression and racism towards the indigenous Maya was terrible. It felt to me there was no other choice for the people there than to create a revolution to liberate themselves from the devastating effect of the Spanish conquest and the appalling abuses of the Mexican government. In Chiapas, you truly feel you're back in colonial times. 7 years later, on the 1st of January 1994, I was about to give birth to my daughter when we awoke to an uprising in several towns, including San Cristobal de las Casas, where I was living. I had almost forgotten about my predicted revolution. Everyone was taken by surprise. This transcendent event shook everyone as if a huge earthquake had happened. For me, it was as if a new era had finally dawned. Then on TV and radio, the world learned who the Zapatistas were and about their tremendous suffering as indigenous Maya. The world's eyes were suddenly on Chiapas, a place thought by tourists just a few minutes before as a paradise on earth. So many people left, and a new crowd of people arrived, journalists, activists, conscious people, and spies. So Chiapas was not on the map prior to this. If I told people I lived in Chiapas, very few knew where that was. Before this uprising, one of the most uplifting the world has seen, the Maya people of Chiapas were forgotten and abandoned. We only knew them because of their incredible ancient ruins and past plunders. Yet the living Maya were an illiterate, marginalized, and extremely poor people. We learned these people had dignity, tremendous vision, and ancient wisdom, and though they had taken up arms, they are very peaceful by nature. In the end, the Chiapas Revolution shed almost no blood. They had something of great significance to say to the world. They were making a stand against changes to Article 27 in the Mexican Constitution, which had guaranteed since the 1910 revolution that the land belonged to those who worked it. With the changes, this communal ejido system was becoming private property. And this was a big blow to the indigenous communal laws everywhere in Mexico. The Zapatistas also made a stance against the NAFTA treaties between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, which were going into effect that same 1st of January. They were the only people in North America to risk their lives opposing this aggression against indigenous people and their way of life. We also learned the Zapatistas were not a band of armed dreamers recreating the Che vision, but actually millions of people organized with their own legitimate army based on the Geneva treaties and formed in a very coherent way to protect themselves against government abuses. For those of us with knowledge about ancient Maya prophecies, the Zapatista uprising is also the predicted return of the plume serpent. He was a high priest who created the advanced Maya civilization. Yet, the plume serpent was defeated by another priest named Smoking Obsidian Mirror from Tenochtitlan, now Mexico City, and was forced to abandon his beautiful reign. He left as the morning star, saying he would return after a planetary convergence in 1987 to bring back his governments in the Maya land. He would return as a high consciousness and take the form of a transcending serpent rising deep within the earth, first in Palenque, Chiapas, the third eye of the Americas, and then in the world. As he rises from under the earth, he will shake from below everything and everyone along his pathway, shaking all the old patriarchal paradigms by being the true people, the true ways of how to govern themselves and take back their freedom from the terror and corruption of smoking mirror. That 1st of January, I was suddenly making all these links in my mind. A few years before, a Mohawk chief in Canada shared with me an ancient prophecy. When the termination of Indians is over, the Iroquois form of government, which survived the conquest intact, will return to all the Americas. And here, apparently, out of the blue, millions of people who had been enslaved by the Spaniards and then terribly exploited by the Mexican government had suddenly organized themselves with the ancient knowledge, recalled in their blood, of Indian council ways and risen to claim their autonomy. The Zapatista way of organizing is very similar to what I have observed in the ancient council ways of the Iroquois League of Peace. Council ways are the form of the government for the new times, the post-termination times, which we hope is now. The ancient council ways are based on the medicine wheel ways. This means there's an horizontal axis composed of the 8 cardinal directions, and the 9th one at the center is the vertical axis that links with the sky. So council ways are a smaller version of the great wheel of the universe, which gives us a natural form of personal and collective governance. Natives in North America lived this way for quite some time in huge brotherhoods and sisterhoods, and there were councils for every aspect of life. Peace councils, war councils, spiritual, political, economic councils, and medicine councils. One of the main characteristics of the council ways is its inclusiveness. All is included, even the bad, and all has its place in the larger wheel. What makes a council a true council is its system of democracy and collectiveness at the same time. So to achieve this, the people must participate and always be consulted in the decision-making process. It's the most resilient and fair form of government that exists, for it teaches people to preserve their autonomy and resources to govern themselves and to choose their destiny. So it helps them grow responsible and conscious in promoting and protecting all forms of life. So a council, being a circle, is unbreakable. There's nothing more powerful than a circle. The system of Indian reservations was created mostly because they could not break our tribal circles. It was easier to draw squares on the U.S. map around the tribes. Yet, they could not break our spirit, as we've shown in 513 years of resistance. So we have always been in resistance against globalization because our chiefs saw this coming. So in the same way, the Chiapas resistance is the most singular one, for it has a global impact. It is not a resistance for an ethnic group, an ideology, or a class war. It's not a resistance solely for their own rights to live. It's a revolution that opened doors not only to all the indigenous of Mexico, but to the whole of Mexican society, mestizo people, non-Indian people, even to the anti-Zapatistas. And not only to Mexican people, but to the whole world, to any one of you who wish to join with your heart and consciousness in this global resistance, this huge return of council ways. In 1994, the Zapatistas stopped their war because their civil society rose and demanded peace. They signed a ceasefire agreement with the government, which the government had not kept, but the Zapatista did. So they said they did so because they heard the drums of the civil society, the heartbeat of the common people. What Marcos, the main spokesperson of the Zapatista, has done is unprecedented. He made comprehensible for the common people the terrible impacts of neoliberalism and globalization in the first and third worlds. This was 11 years ago, and before that, it was just intellectual talk. If the people rose in arms and most had only wooden sticks to defend themselves, it was because there were no other options. They had tried by all means to be heard, and they always said they had weapons that aspired to be useless. Their cry, "Ya basta," that's enough, was their claim for decent lives, food, healthcare, and education, where there was absolutely no hope for their children. The Zapatistas have also raised consciousness among their people about how to effect powerfully a clear line of resistance by taking practical actions. For example, by not accepting anything from the government with their tactics of buying the people with crumbs. This action has made it clear to all that Zapatista dignity is not for sale. The Zapatista people have said no to alcohol, drugs, deforestation, and the plundering of resources, no to the abuses of the government and their interest in the oil in the soil. This no led them to declare their liberated autonomous territories in 1994, liberated at last for 500 years of an unjust course in their destiny. When you enter an autonomous community, and this ironically after you pass a federal army post, you're greeted by a large sign saying that here the people control their own land and resources. To do this more effectively, they have formed a good government of the people, la Junta de Buen Gobierno, in opposition to the bad government of the financial powers. In the autonomous communities, they say the good governments listen to everyone who visits. Their government is situated in what is called the caracoles, which means in Spanish shells or snails. These are their five central meeting places for community representatives. The seashell was a traditional instrument blown by the ancient Maya to invoke their deities and to convene the people to their ceremonies. So the caracoles are a speaker to the world to be heard and to hear everyone who comes to learn about the resistance and exchange their words. This underground way is also forming a snail who walks close to the ground and leaves a clear path for all to follow. When you meet with the Zapatista men and women in one of their rustic buildings at the Caracol, looking at you through their black ski mask, you see an ancient wisdom in their eyes. The ski mask not only protects their identity, but is a powerful symbol of how they were never heard despite their many and long efforts. The mask also says, "We would rather stay hidden, for we do not want the power. This is a resistance of truths and actions." And in the end, through their mask, they see a great deal and are no fools. In meeting with them, there is a long silence before talking and a respectful and kind one. Then, one of the ski masks greets you in a voice that seems to have suffered for eternity, yet is not complaining, but warm and clear. "I am talking with an unarmed civil commander." The voice starts explaining to me that everything here is decided by the people through referendum, and it's often a long process. Starting at 12 years of age, everyone is consulted in taking decisions. For 11 years, the resistance has grown a great deal, not without enormous sacrifices, creating their programs for autonomous education based on preserving the environment as well as their ancient culture. They also have created their own health programs, trained hundreds of young men and women as health promoters all over Chiapas, and built autonomous clinics in many different areas. As I hear this short indigenous man talking in a slow, deliberate fashion, I cannot stop thinking about the deeply internalized oppression the Maya carry. It's a mentality that is hard to break through, yet the ability to break free is something the Zapatista resistance has given to the people. To achieve this, the native Maya kicked a huge hole in the globalization paradigms. And in this, they were the first one to speak of globalizing resistance for the sake of everyone, for the sake of our children. The Chiapas resistance is also a spiritual revolution. For the Maya people, the disconnection from their own spirituality was very drastic under the Spanish conquest. While northern natives were marginalized in isolated reservations, many of our forefathers and foremothers did everything to keep intact the sacred link to our spiritual ways from before the conquest. In Chiapas, this link was destroyed by the Spaniard to such an extent that most indigenous did not even know there was a conquest. However, one of the things the Zapatista brought to the people, especially Marcos and his communiques, is a reawakening of awareness of the ancient Maya spirituality and its deities. I bring my attention back to the meeting when I hear the commander telling me that in their understanding, they are not doing this huge sacrifice only for the people, but for everyone. Para todos, todo. Para nosotros, nada. All for everyone, nothing for us. It is a sacrifice, for in their work as representatives, they have to leave their families for many weeks. They only have a few hard tortillas to eat for days with nothing on them. The representatives sleep on the hard floor of their meeting rooms. It's a very difficult life to be a Zapatista in this sense, he continues explaining. Sometimes they have no money for buses to go from one place to another, and sometimes they don't sleep for days and nights. Also, they risk their lives a great deal. A Zapatista life requires a lot of endurance and determination. Sometimes they get ill for lack of decent food, he says, but they keep going. They cannot give up for the sake of their people and all humanity. The man continues, as Zapatistas, we have been declared terrorists for simply wanting to live, for asking for food, for health care, for education. But for us, in the eyes of the true men and true women, terrorism is greed, racism, hate, and war. For true change, we are ready to die with dignity in resistance instead of waiting to die from curable diseases and hunger. The meeting ends after a few hours, and the men and women commanders tell me very humbly, muchísimas gracias for your great sacrifice of coming to meet with us and giving a donation to help us run our clinics. And I look at them astonished. I replied, not without difficulty in holding back my tears, I am not doing anything here. You're doing everything for all of us, bringing a light of hope to humanity that this is possible, that millions of people can organize at the same time to create this huge movement so the right values can return to our wounded humanity. You all talk to us about being verdadero hombre, verdadera mujer, the true man and the true woman. We have the same expression among the Mohawk people, Ongwe Homwe, which means the true people. So it's very ancient to Native people to be true humans, true warriors of life, to fight for what we know is right and for the transformation of all darkness. I leave the shell flooded with inspiration. Yes, no doubt, the Chiapas resistance is a new kind of revolution. In meeting with them, I'm overwhelmed by their amazing humility and patience. It's heartbreaking, the absence of ego you see in these people. They're just right there, smiling at you under their mask, through their eyes as bright as stars. Marcos said, there are no recipes, no ideologies, no tactics, no laws, no regulation, no slogans. Zapatismo is but a bridge, a rainbow bridge among us all. The Zapatistas have no plan. They walk one step at a time and wait to see where their next one is going to lead them, for they walk with the will and heart of the people and with the dream of the earth. And they are shaking the world from underneath, just as the plume serpent promised. It's a new kind of resistance. Their message calls us to dream with the earth and to hear her dream within us. The Chiapas resistance offer a place beyond the oppression these people have lived for so long that mirrors all the oppressions we all have within. They are the new warriors. I can go back home now with a renewed sense of hope. True changes are possible, and it will come from under the earth like the Maya who sleep on her flesh. The ancient Maya prophesied that there will come a time after the planetary convergence in 1987 when the dark times will be over, the humble will win over the arrogant. It's happening on the ground with the simple people. They barely know how to speak Spanish to defend themselves in the dominant culture. Yet, in their nonviolent ways of expressing their integrity, They are now allied with hundreds of organizations and millions of people all over the world. They shine a light of integrity, while we let ourselves be contaminated by consumerist societies with the wrong values, such as competition, ambition, arrogance, and polluting our sacred mother. The Zapatistas have opened the possibility for the Maya people to break through their internalized oppression, transforming their fear of punishment. So this revolution is about transforming our fears of lethargy, authority, and terror, the same fears that have created this destructive global empire. This small yet great people are teaching us to not be afraid to stand tall in our own truth. It's a deep transformation they are asking all of us to achieve in resisting oblivion together. What I've learned from my Zapatista compañeros is that the seed of all true power is within us. We will all die one day, but dignity can never die because dignity is the spirit of earth within us. If humanity can learn to see through indigenous eyes and to hear in the land the voices of our native ancestors, which continue to speak to us of dignity, then the hearts of all people will be healed. We are all being called to go through these lessons in courage in order to enter into the new times in 2013 prophesied by the Maya. For technology has brought a lot of communities, securities, more scientific knowledge, but life appears to have less and less meaning for humanity. Never before has humanity been so empty and bored or made so many efforts to desperately acquire more. This desperate grasping is, and has always been, the only real cause of humanity's sufferings and the imbalances of the earth. It creates aggression and poverty against the earth instead of the open generosity of our natural selves. For the worst toxins are not those of external pollution, but in humanity's wrong thinking. The Maya have brought to humanity a great awakening. Possessing nothing, greatly suffering from the negative impacts of globalization, they bring the lessons we most need. They strive to create true forms of organization based on the council ways and generously share this model with us. We can only join our hearts with them in hoping we can also recreate wherever we are the underground resistance that needs to happen in a massive way. This will happen through gratitude, respect for nature, and cooperating as much as we can with the forces of life, with the like-minded people around us. We cannot fight directly the powers of globalization that are killing us all. We can only strive to bring back the dream of the earth, her council ways, however we can. Democracy and true community means that all of us not only speak, but also take action to create a light of hope for our children, for the coming faces, as the Iroquois call them. Marcos wrote in 1993 before the uprising, "Now it's time to wake up. From the clash of the two winds, the storm will be born. Its time has arrived. The fire of history is aroused. Now the wind from above rules, but the wind from below is arising. The prophecy is here, and when the storm calms, when the rain and fire again leave the earth in peace, the world will no longer be the world, but something better." I was explaining recently to my daughter that we're all connected, and anything she does can affect someone else in the world. She told me she did not believe me, that she had just put her feet in the pond by our home and it did not affect me. So how could it affect a Chinese person around the globe? Well, I explained, you're not understanding the principle correctly. When you put your feet in the pond because you love water so much, that makes you very happy. And here, as I am working on my presentation for the Bionic conference, feeling a bit stuck, your happiness inspires me. It helps me right from my heart. So who knows, maybe putting your feet in the pond here in Chiapas will affect several thousand people in Bioneers in California. So she said as much as that with her eyes wide. Later, I heard my daughter talking with a young Maya Zapatista woman while they're working. Don't drop the broom carelessly like that. You can really affect a lot of people. Yes, we all can affect individually a lot of people. The extermination of the Maya, a very real and present threat, would be the end of our hope for casting off the global imperialism killing us all. Let's drum to join our heartbeats with the Zapatistas in this resistance for life. Viva la revolución. Muchas gracias.